Sam, it's been several hours since your last zombie takeout. Can I prepare you something? What's up? Welcome to episode 168 of
Zombie Takeout,
the B Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John,
and I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, got some listener submitted. This is from Roberto Suarez in reference to this week's movie from our Facebook page. He said, "I love this movie, and I love the soundtrack." And well, of course, we'll be talking about whether or not we love the movie, and I think we'll definitely have to discuss the soundtrack. It was very unique.
Yeah.
And we also received another epic email from Richard Hawes. Again, cutting this one down, but not cutting it down quite as much as I did the last one. There were some points I wanted to address. He said, "Dear Uncle John and Scotto, last week when Scotto suggested Roddy Piper in a John Carpenter-directed remake of Old Boy, I can't believe he didn't follow it with the line, 'I'm here to chew octopus and kick ass, and I'm all out of octopus.' That's awesome. I wish I would have thought of it."
God damn it. Ah, so not funny. But yeah, that would have been gold. Where the fuck were you, Richard? That's all I have to say. Yeah.
He also goes on to say, "I went against your pleas and went right back to episode one."
I thought he was gonna say watched it with his family.
Wow.
"I had grandma over and we watched Old Boy." Oh man, the heebity jeebities.
"You should feel proud of it. It was a good show. While it was about as twice as long as it should have been, and the conversation did run out of steam, the first half was great." I may have to go back and listen to just the first half then.
Oh, fuck, no.
"Although I wouldn't classify something mega-budget like Battlefield Earth and Species as B-movies or cult movies, it never bothered me that you covered them. I'm glad you did. Two of your best episodes. Reason I brought this up is we were just discussing another movie along similar lines that we're going to be reviewing as soon as possible. And I wanted to just mention that those two and ID4 and 2012 fall into what I call big budget Bs. They are, you know, of course, mega budget, as Richard said, you know, Hollywood mainstream movies that really, in terms of the writing and often acting, are just B movies.
Yeah, Battlefield. That man, that was a train wreck. Just in the production side alone.
Yeah, yeah.
And that director, I don't think, has ever worked again.
I wouldn't be surprised if you're right about that.
Yeah.
And Species, it reduced... Well, I can't say it reduced the acting, because Forest Whitaker and Ben Kingsley, you know, have dubious reputations, but even Alfred Molina wasn't that good in Species.
Didn't we call that episode Paychecks All Around?
Yeah, yeah.
That's like an episode title that you really... It really stuck.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, there's nothing good about these movies, which is why I call them big budget Bs. Yes, they're expensive and mainstream, but they are B movies.
Well, we also, you know, I think we said up front we would be doing bombs. In fact, I could easily see us doing another bomb trilogy or another trilogy in our near future.
But ID4 wasn't exactly a bomb.
Very true. ID4 was not a bomb.
It did very well. It was just bad
shit.
Along the Roland Emmerich lines, he went on to say, "I'm intrigued by all the Shakespeare-related films you've talked about over the years. I'm sure Roland Emmerich's Anonymous must be on the list."
Oh, man.
I'm tempted, but I don't know if I can handle Roland Emmerich Shakespeare without going on a multi-state killing spree.
I think we're going to have to. I think he's right.
Okay. Like I said, I have been tempted. It's just going to piss me off way too much. But that could make for a great episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while since we've had an episode where we've just been pissed off by a movie.
Yeah, and we've had a very good run lately, so...
Yeah, ridiculously so.
It has to run out eventually.
Right.
He said, "I caught a lot of throwaway criticisms of Carpenter's Ghost of Mars in your episodes. I wonder what you didn't like about it. I've always really liked it and just watched it again. It's been a while since I've seen it. I think it was on, you know, one of the pay channels at the time, like just after it hit the pay channels. I was mostly disappointed by the acting specifically, and casting specifically, Natasha Henstridge and Ice Cube.
Was he listening to something different? Because I don't remember you.
I've referenced Ghost of Mars regularly, particularly when we've talked about Carpenter.
Okay.
I've made fun of it quite a bit.
All right.
And so it was really just the acting. In hindsight, I should go back because I've been disappointed by just about every Carpenter movie we've reviewed. They didn't hold up, so it might be interesting to go back and see how Ghost of Mars holds up now, looking at it critically and, having my memory refreshed of the Carpenter's other movies.
I still love They Live, and actually, someone had just talked to me about Hell Comes to Frog Town. Like they couldn't remember the name of the movie that they had seen at some party while they were all, drinking or whatever, and they described the plot, and it's like Hell Comes to Frog Town.
Yeah. I've run into similar situations, and I think we cover a lot of movies that people don't necessarily remember by name, but they remember bits and pieces of.
Yeah,
Frog
they had
Town is
known
one
we
of
had done the movie and everything,
them. Yeah,
or knew that we had done, Roddy Piper movies.
yeah. Now, he also mentioned, in reference to the trauma stuff we've done, a Toxic Avenger novel. He asked if we had read it. I didn't know such a thing existed. Maybe it was mentioned in my, sequels and remakes section, but I really need to read that now.
I'm stunned.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that would be like. It's not a comic, it's a novel, a real novel.
He said the novel, so I'm guessing it's an actual text-only novel.
A word novel as opposed to a graphic one.
Yes. Because there are probably countless toxic graphic novels, comic
All
books, yada
right.
yada. There was an animated series, after all. He went on to say that he's surprised by our knowledge of Steven Seagal movies, particularly Under Siege. Under Siege is the one on the train, right?
I thought that was the boat. I don't know. I think we just proved him wrong about our Steven
Yeah.
Seagal
There
knowledge.
you go.
They all blend together. It's just one
Yeah,
movie.
it is. Whichever one Erica Eleniak is in, I've seen that a few times for her.
I think Under Siege was the ship.
Okay.
And he
Might
was
be
the
the one I'm
cook.
thinking of. But like, as you said, they all kind of run together. If you've seen one, you've seen them all, and we can kind of just, I remember titles, and from there you can kind of just plug in the variables.
Someone should just edit them all down into one.
Haha.
Like, just take the best from each of them and make one movie. Even if it doesn't make any sense,
No.
wouldn't it just be great to watch that, though?
And make it appear like all of these scenarios are crammed into a day.
Well, of
Or
course.
maybe a week.
The
A day would
plot's
be stretching.
interchangeable, too. I mean, come on. You could easily take it down and it would still make sense. It would be the same movie.
Well, basically.
Yeah.
Hence our knowledge of them. They're all the same movie. I'm sure we've each seen at least one of them.
Yeah.
So from there, you can extrapolate. And he finished up by saying, "Oh, and I did the Podtrac survey. A lot of the questions presumed I'm in America, which I'm not, so some of the answers weren't entirely accurate. I hope it helps, though. Thank you, Richard. I wanted to also use that to mention the Podtrac survey. It's on the right hand under the links. Podtrac is the company who takes our numbers, who we get our numbers from. And it will help them get a bit of demographic information, which, if we have enough listeners someday, will help us get advertisers."
Oh, that'd be nice.
And he finished up by saying, "Hilarity ensues." Thank you once again, Richard. I would say keep them coming, but I don't know how much more there is to say.
Yeah,
You're certainly welcome to write, of course, but,
I think I'm in trouble, honestly. I think if he has a soft spot in his heart for the alphanumerically challenged, I could be out of a job very soon.
And on to some news. First story from CinemaBlend. New documentary explores what Ghostbusters is really about.
Oh, I've heard about this.
With the success of Room 237, the documentary about the supposed hidden meanings in The Shining, it seems that a new doc about the many meanings hidden within another supernatural-themed 80s classic is on the way. A trailer has been unearthed by documentary channel via Movies.com for Spook Central, which asks devoted fans of Ghostbusters to share their theories about what Ivan Reitman's action comedy is really all about. What is the relevance of the Ghostbusters logo? Is the movie about the taboo of smoking? Is it all about sex? Is Slimer suffering from attention deficit disorder? Is Sigourney Weaver's Dana Barrett afraid not of ghosts, but of becoming a mother? Or is it all about obesity? Curiously, the truth for several of this movie's theorists lies in the fridge. Documentary Channel says Spook Central's producer-director Ivo Shandor says it's real and will be released this September. However, while this statement is repeated in their Twitter feed, they also retweet an AV Club headline saying that it's fake.
Yeah, I thought it was fake, or a joke at least.
I watched it. I was reasonably sure it was fake because you never see any of the people talking. You only see clips from the movie in the trailer. But I was looking at the comments on the Cinema Blend post on Facebook, and someone pointed out that Ivo Shandor is a character from the Ghostbusters universe. According to the Ghostbusters wiki, he's the leader of the Cult of Gozer and the primary antagonist of Ghostbusters the video game, and according to the first Ghostbusters movie, he designed the 55 Central Park West apartment building.
Oh, that's right.
So it's obviously a fake.
Yeah.
But it is a very entertaining fake, and I recommend checking out the trailer at the link.
You know, the obesity theory is not that far-fetched, though. I hadn't heard that in the stuff about it, but, you know, there's the ghost that's eating too much. Yeah. There, you know.
Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. There's the, you know, the fact that it went through the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually not that far-fetched.
Well, the beautiful thing about the trailer is the way it's cut, all of the theories make sense with what they show you.
Well, I'd heard some crazy shit about Coca-Cola and stuff.
Yeah, and the smoking theory, because the circle and slash is around the ghost, and then they cut to Murray and Aykroyd smoking in several scenes.
That's just ridiculous.
I mean, it's absurd, of course, but it's very nicely cut together and very funny. Highly recommend it. And final story, this one relevant to this week's movie, or at least the director. Legendary plans first quarter 2014 shoot for Warcraft. In reference to the upcoming Duncan Jones-directed Warcraft movie, producer Charles Roven said, "First quarter 2014, we're going to shoot that movie. We're moving forward. Obviously, Legendary is making that film, and I'm having a great time with Duncan. Important because I'm a World of Warcraft player, as I've mentioned before. But also, this thing has been rumored since 2007 when I started playing. Legendary first got the rights in 2006. In 2007, concept art was released. In 2009, Raimi was attached. And then, I think last year, he bowed out to make Oz the Great and Powerful, and Jones came on board. So, for 7 years now, it's been at a standstill.
It's had better luck than the Halo movie.
Mm. But for 7 years, it's been at a standstill, and now we have a shooting date. And it's been since January that Jones has been attached. So he has actually made progress on this thing that, you know, I think most of us have given up hope on until he was attached. So that is great news. I'm really looking forward to that. If all goes well, maybe it'll come out in 2015. That was the plan, and I think they can pull that off.
That's doable, definitely.
Which means Warcraft, Episode 7, Avengers 2, and possibly Modern Ocean in the same year.
Wow, is Episode 7 really supposed to be 2015?
Abrams has said that he may push it back, but I think he's recanted that, and I think Disney kind of pulled him in line. He's pulled back from that and said it will be out on time.
Yeah, I think I remember saying that that's what he thinks.
Yeah. And I saw an interview with Shane Carruth about Upstream, and he said it took about a year and a half to shoot. And they're starting to shoot Modern Ocean this summer. So if it follows a similar schedule, that means Modern Ocean in 2015 as well.
Damn. Yeah, one of those years.
Mm. And on to this week's movie, which is from 2009, Moon. And of course, the impromptu plot summary. Sponsored by excessively calm and pleasant computer voices, making science fiction just a little bit creepier since 2001.
2001, but I thought they did that before. Oh, never mind. And also brought to you by Lunar Industries. Come for the energy, stay for the rest of your natural life.
However long that may be.
Oh, yes. What we have here, we have a worker on this lonely, desolate lunar base. Because that's how we get our energy.
Mm.
Things start getting weird though, right from the beginning. He starts seeing things, hallucinating. You wonder if he's just been up there too long, but it just seems like there's something else wrong, you know, than just a mental issue.
Something just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. He winds up getting into an accident and wakes up back in the base.
In the infirmary.
Right, in the infirmary. Despite there not being anyone up on the base except him and his trusty sidekick computer.
I did not put that together.
So, right.
This is the second time I've seen this movie.
As soon as he woke up from the infirmary, I was just like, how the fuck did he get back there? So, there, yeah, there are all sorts of things that are wrong. And they have the door sealed shut. You kind of feel like they're taking you in this direction of 2001, where the computer is very HAL-like.
And Kevin Spacey, who did the voice of the computer, does a great HAL impression.
Yeah, yeah. And you kind of feel like the computer is just, you know, it's going to be a man versus machine sort of movie. And right away, they reveal that is not actually going to be the case here. The thing is, he tricks the computer into getting let outside. He sabotages some machinery, so the computer, which apparently is programmed to be gullible, lets him go outside. Although it's later revealed that the computer really just has a complete soft spot for his Sams.
Well, he's programmed to keep Sam safe.
Yeah, and happy.
And happy. And he's willing to apparently stretch what that requires. Apparently there weren't many other protocols put in place.
Right.
Beyond
right.
that.
Right. And why would there be? They're up there on their own. They're really, I mean.
Right.
So he goes out. Yeah, he finds the crash site. I'm not sure exactly how or why he went out that far or in that way. Oh, that's right. The harvester wasn't working. He was getting no readouts on the harvester. So he was going out to see why. He wanted to fix it himself, and they weren't letting him. And so when he gets to this harvester, he finds the crashed vehicle and himself in a suit in the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So he brings himself in. So, of course, right away, the
it's obvious.
The spoiler here that it is revealed within the first, like, 20 minutes.
Half hour.
Or half hour. That they are clones. Mm-hmm. You know, and they, you know, first they're kind of like, well, you know, how do you know I'm the original or whatnot? But of course, they're up there on the moon by themselves. You kind of realize they're both clones pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So the rest of the movie, you can almost say hilarity ensues from there.
Yeah.
Because the rest of the movie is, what are the implications? What's going to happen to them? There's this rescue ship that is, you know, counting down to its arrival. And of course, it's not really a rescue ship, is it? It's more of a damage control ship.
Were they just sending them there to repair? Or were they making sure that the existing Sam didn't know too much?
Well,
because the harvester was damaged. It did need to be repaired.
They did need to repair the harvester. They also need to clear. They had. See, the thing was, they had thought that Sam had died mm-hmm. in the accident.
Right.
So they probably were there to remove the body.
There we go. That's it.
And to, you know,
yeah.
make sure this whole thing keeps going, you know, make sure it was supplied well and stuff. Right. Yeah, so. They, you know, that's counting down, and they're just trying to figure out what exactly they should do, and hilarity really does ensue from there, you could say.
It's really just Sam Rockwell and Sam Rockwell doing a sci-fi version of My Dinner with Andre for most of it.
Yes.
Just having conversations with himself. And he did a great job of differentiating the different Sams.
Well,
because they all have slightly different personalities.
It's not just, actually, they have the same personality. It's that as the shelf life of a clone, I'm gathering, is short.
Well, yes. 3 months, I think they said.
I think it was 3 years.
Three years, yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, once one is at the beginning of his life because they, took him out and thawed him as soon as they thought the other one had died, which is how he wound up in the infirmary. And the other one has been, just about ready for his quote unquote time to go home.
Yeah, that explains why one is more calm and more laid back, and the other is really just wants to investigate and figure out what's happening.
Right, he's weaker, he's literally falling apart.
But there were when you see the previous Sams, and there's a on the video, there are some slight differences in personality and the way they speak, and they explained it by saying that there were how do they put it, minor duplication errors.
Oh, yeah. There were some, some like to have the beard and stuff,
So
and
this minor duplication errors could account for different personalities.
some kept, all neatly clean shaven and all
I think one had a southern drawl.
that. Really?
Although it's not necessarily that the shelf life is short per se, just because the shelf life is short. The symptoms Sam is showing and the time of their onset indicate he's suffering from acute radiation poisoning.
That's true too.
Because he's, on the moon dealing with this helium-3 in this mining facility.
Yeah.
And it explains why they use clones, because it is a high-risk job.
Yeah.
You're not going to survive long doing it, so why not just have a renewable workforce?
Yeah, more than high risk. It's more like, certain death.
Yeah, in a few years, right?
Yeah.
Now, this was actually specifically written for Rockwell by Duncan Jones and Nathan Parker. And of course, we need to point out Duncan Jones is, of course, the son of David Bowie. I think every mention of him it's an obligatory thing. You have to mention that. Hopefully he lives it down eventually.
Well, there's some odd things. It begins with the ad, for, I guess, Lunar Industries.
And I loved the ad because it takes care of all your exposition in a very entertaining way in less than a minute.
And its slogan is "Where Are We Now?" which is actually the name of the first single off of Bowie's latest album, which of course just came out this year.
Oh, that's interesting. Wonder if well, if it just came out this year, he probably wrote the song after the movie.
Oh, definitely.
So
Yeah.
it was maybe, borrowed from the movie. That's kind of cool.
It could be. I don't know. Well, it's a weird song. It's like a slow, like very somber song for Bowie.
Now, the title sequence, did it remind you of anything?
A lot of this movie reminded me of Beyond the Black Rainbow. Well, at least the beginning did, Beyond the Black Rainbow with the ad and stuff,
Yeah, I can see that.
which came out the year after this.
The credits were kind of, in most cases, not all cases, were kind of made to look like part of the environment.
Okay.
Very Fringe.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Now, when did Fringe start? I think it was a year before this.
I think so too, yeah.
So they probably borrowed that, maybe, but well, I don't know. They may have been working on it before Fringe, but I think they probably borrowed a bit of that from Fringe.
It could even be the same, title company. There's only so many of those around.
Yeah, true, true. It's not like it was a terribly original idea when Fringe did it.
Right.
Now, you mentioned Beyond the Black Rainbow, and the 2001 similarities are obvious.
Well, of course, 2001, he's mirroring.
The computer is actually called Gertie 3000.
Right.
Which is an obvious nod to HAL 9000.
Right.
But there were a couple of other big influences that I noticed one, and one was mentioned on Wikipedia that I wholeheartedly agree with. Solaris and Silent Running.
Okay.
Are you familiar at all with Solaris?
It's been a long time.
The scientist sent up to a space station starts experiencing some paranormal stuff. And it's actually an intelligence on the planet that's causing it. But the beginning where he kind of sees all of these things that don't make sense, and there's a hallucination of a girl who I think was supposed to be his daughter, although it didn't look like the daughter we saw at the end.
But how would he have known what
But his
she was
daughter
going to
looked
look
like at
like?
that age, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that I didn't quite get, but that was very Solaris. And the other one is Silent Running, which I would hope you've seen. Bruce Dern alone on a ship with just robots and a bunch of plants.
I think I have. It's been a long time since I've seen that too, though.
Because most of the movie, it's just Sam Rockwell and Kevin Spacey.
And Sam Rockwell.
And Sam Rockwell. So you have two actors for the vast majority of the movie. You have the daughter at the end and the brief appearance at the beginning. You have a couple of videos from the wife.
Yeah.
And the crew who shows up at the end, they have what, two lines?
You kind of see people on the other screen from the business too that just say a few
Briefly.
things. Yeah.
But, aside from some barely even supporting roles, I wouldn't even call them supporting, it's Rockwell and Spacey. So it's a very sparse setup, almost play-like,
Yeah.
which was interesting in a, fairly sizable budget science fiction movie.
I don't know how large a budget you think this had. Do you have the stats on that?
I don't, I think it was, I want to say 5 million.
Yeah, that's not very.
Not huge, but not tiny either.
Well, I know.
And they made the most of it. It doesn't look low budget at all.
I mean, Spacey's got to have somewhat of a check.
Well, yeah. Incidentally, Kevin Spacey read the script and agreed to voice Gertie, but when the film was finished, and only if he liked it. So he wanted to wait and see, wait until they were done and then see it to see if he liked it before he agreed to do it.
Wow, that's balls.
Having loved it, he recorded his lines in half a day.
Huh.
So he wasn't involved in the production at all until after the fact. It was probably some PA reading Gertie's lines when they were
Yeah.
filming.
I like the face of Gertie.
Yes, it has this little smiley face on it that changes happy to sad depending on what it has to say.
They gave the computer moods.
Always a nice touch when you can, make a creepy computer that much creepier by trying to make it pleasant. I mean, I said the thing with the voice of my sponsor, but the smiley face just gives it that little extra.
Oh yeah, there were some moments where you I just thought it was gonna fucking go nuts and start killing,
Yeah. Well, they set it up as, like you said, man against machine. So, and I think it's largely because of 2001 that we have that assumption.
Yeah.
Because that was, Hal went insane. So we assume Gertie's going to go insane, and when he doesn't, and the plot takes that twist, it gets kind of interesting.
Well, because there's a few things that they point out right away. What happens if you get seriously injured when it's just you and a computer?
Right.
I mean, even before the crash, like he spilled hot water on his hand.
Right.
So, like, what happens up there? You're fucked. That's it. So logically, there had to be some sort of contingency plan, and sure enough, there was.
Well, that's the whole point of the movie, is that there were four clones before the first Sam that we meet, and there was one after the two Sams that we spend most of the movie with. So
Yeah.
there were seven in total. And presumably more, because you see this video of what happens to the clones when they're done.
Yeah.
They're dissolved. I'm guessing it's to conserve the genetic material
Probably.
so they don't run out of it.
Yeah, they probably are just recycled into another clone.
And I kind of liked that they didn't explain why Sam was sick, the older Sam.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have guessed radiation sickness if I hadn't looked it up, but it was just. It would have been too on the nose, I think, if they explicitly said it. I like that they gave him the right symptoms, so if you knew, you could pick up on it, but didn't make it that clear.
Yeah. And it wasn't really important why? It was either, a clone's life can't last as long, or that he is in the middle of the moon with dangerous materials.
And much closer to the sun, and
Right. But that's the point. Like, what happens to them really doesn't matter, does it? Or
kind
does
of,
it
yeah, that is
matter?
the point.
Yeah.
Or I should say, not the point. That's the question of the movie.
Right.
Does a clone have a soul?
Yeah.
Do they have a right to live? And of course, when they find out about the whole cloning thing and find out that there's a crew coming to ostensibly repair something, they hatch a plan to send one of them back to Earth. I had a little issue with this because the initial plan was to send the older, sick Sam back.
Right.
Stowed away aboard a ship that was not intended to carry a person, just the helium-3 canisters.
Yeah.
Made no sense. I don't know why they would have planned that originally.
No.
The logic in the movie was that he'd done his time and, he should be allowed to go back. But his odds of surviving the trip were slim to none. It would just make more sense that the younger, healthier version would go back, which he ultimately did. Moon was screened as part of a lecture series at NASA's Space Central in Houston at the request of a professor there. He'd been reading online that we'd done this film about helium-3 mining, and that's something that people at NASA are working on.
Really?
Helium-3 is a thing, and they're working on mining it. We did a Q&A afterward, this is Jones explaining. They asked me why the base looks so sturdy, like a bunker, and not like the kind of stuff they are designing that they're going to transport with them.
How would he know that?
No, they asked the question, you know, because
Right.
they're bringing this very, you know, simple modular, less durable stuff with them for colonization, or for, you know, initial colonization. And so, you know, they asked why he went with something sturdier. And he said, in the future, I assume you won't want to continue carrying everything with you. You'll want to use the resources on the moon to build things. And a woman in the audience raised her hand and said, I'm actually working on something called mooncrete, which is concrete that mixes with lunar regolith and ice water from the moon's polar caps.
Good God.
So Jones actually stumbled upon something that they're actually working on. I mean, I would assume the helium-3 thing he probably knew about. That seemed awfully specific to be a shot in the dark.
Yeah.
But the sturdy, you know, long-lasting base was him stumbling upon something that they're already working on. Granted, it makes sense that they would do that.
Damn, that's good. Because, well, what you're saying, that NASA officials are asking him questions about it, like, why did you do this and not how we're designing it right now?
Mm-hmm.
How the fuck would he supposed to know what they're designing right now? You're working on it now. You haven't designed it yet.
I think it's pretty well known, if you follow a lot of, you know, space news, that they are thinking about colonization, and, you know, at least for a short term on the moon, and, you
right.
know, longer term on Mars. And there's been a lot of news about the kinds of buildings they would bring with them,
and the
kinds
about,
of structures.
You know, making a resort up there, you know.
But initially, they are going to be very simple, very, you know, short term building.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, they assumed that he would know about this, and suggesting maybe he should have used that, and he had this other idea that just happened to be what they're actually looking towards in the future.
Right, he's looking to do it in the future, so.
Yeah. I just thought that was very cool that he actually stumbled upon something that they're actually working on. Oh, also, when Sam, the younger Sam, was going back in the Helium 3 ship, they show him briefly.
Yeah.
The ship is shaking and there's this weird lighting. Did it remind you of the light tunnel from 2001? I thought it was a pretty obvious nod.
Yeah, there was no fetus, though.
Oh, no, no. I mean, it was just a brief sort of halo around him. And it just...
I see what you mean, though.
Yeah. It just seemed like, okay, we're going to obviously nod to 2001 again, because everybody's going to compare. Also, I loved the kick me sign on Gertie's back.
Yes.
As this younger Sam is leaving, Gertie turns around for, I forget why, he had to hook something up or adjust something. And you see a kick me sign that he pulls off of his back before he leaves. Now, we got to talk about the music. Very interesting, very effective music, but very different. It was equal parts orchestra, synth, and rock band, basically. It was guitar, bass, and drums at points, orchestra at other points, synths at other points, and odd sound effects, all kind of weaved together.
I think it gelled enough with the movie that, I mean, it didn't distract, so I really didn't pay that much attention to it, honestly.
I think I was paying more attention because I'd seen Roberto's comment before I watched it.
Oh, yeah.
And so I kind of made me think about the music a bit more than I probably would have if I hadn't seen that.
I think... a lot of the times music, if it's used, it's like a chud,
mm-hmm.
where it's a distraction. It's not a good thing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It stands out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, very rare is a movie like, you know, Carruth's movies where.
I was just going to mention Carruth because the score in this reminded me a lot of his stuff. It was more soundscapes than music.
True.
Which is similar to Carruth. But it's, I don't want to say it's a character, but it just fits it in a way that is very unique, but very effective.
Yeah, I would say it blended in a lot more than Upstream's crazy ass soundtrack.
Yeah. And Primer was pretty weird too.
Yeah, it was.
But just how offbeat it was in that combination of orchestra and, you know, rock instruments, which kind of caught my attention.
There's a big Bowie influence on this movie too, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure we referenced Major Tom. I'm sure I don't remember specifically, but I'm sure plenty of people did mention Major Tom when the movie came out.
Well, I think that it's intentionally so. I mean, it's his first movie, and really Bowie's first single was Space Oddity. I mean, it was his first, hit, you could say. Because I know he'd done singles before that even. But think about it. Space Oddity is about, it's kind of a drug, metaphor, someone trying it for the first time, leaving planet Earth and or normal life, and just never wanting to come back. And it's romanticizing it, of course, I know, which way my spaceship's gonna go, I've got this life behind, but I'm just gonna leave it, whereas this,
The exact opposite.
if you put that into the, in this terms, it's, don't leave the fucking planets.
Well, they were already out there and they were trying to come back. Well,
Right.
not even come back, because they were cloned or grown, if you will, on the moon.
Right.
They were natives to the moon, but they were trying to come back to what they thought was their home.
Well, think of the story of Major Tom in realistic terms.
Yeah, he'd live about an hour.
Well, even if he didn't. In fact, that would be the best case scenario if he dies in an hour. What do you do in space
You sit there and look around.
with an old-timey rocket ship?
Well, no, he left the cabin, the capsule.
That's true.
Presumably in the suit, because otherwise he's immediately frozen. Presumably he's in the suit and walking out of the capsule and leaving it behind, and he's gonna live until his air runs out, which, let's say an hour just to put a number on it.
I wasn't even thinking in those terms. I always thought he at least had the common sense to go into the ship and say, "Fuck it, I'm leaving here in the ship." But yeah, you're right. He could very well have just walked into space,
There is a
which.
line in the song about leaving the capsule, if I
Very
recall.
true. Very true.
He's just floating there.
So, unless you can travel faster than light speed, though, you're not gonna see shit. You're gonna expend, your whole life, before you get to anything. So yeah, the best case scenario is if you only lasted it like an hour. Because what your fate would be? What these guys go through at Moon.
Except they have a roof over their head and food, and
Right.
they can survive in the base. It's just there's not much else.
So if you're taking the whole, Major Tom, drug analogy, yes, your perspective gets changed and it's all well and good the first time you do it, but you gotta try on living with it.
Okay. I was just thinking this is kind of Major Tom in reverse.
Well, exactly. It's saying, wow, that's a really fucking terrible idea leaving the planet. Let's get home.
Yeah. And when they get home, end of the movie.
Ah,
Very nice touch because.
this is kind of where it falls apart to me,
Really?
the whole ending of this.
Younger Sam is on the ship and heading toward Earth, and then you hear just these brief news snippets of his testimonies and the news about the clone colony on Mars and the impact he's had since he's come back. You didn't like that.
I thought it was all very rushed, very tacked on, kinda. It didn't feel like it was really a part of the story or a conclusion. It was just kind of like, oh yeah,
Was a quick way to establish, yes, he made it back.
yeah.
But I liked it. I'm glad that they resolved it.
Why wouldn't he have kept a low profile when he returned to Earth?
Well, the whole point of going back was to,
Tell everybody about what was going on up
to blow the
in.
whistle on the Lunar Industries and the fact that there are these clones on Mars, or on the moon, rather.
Yeah. That's the sequel. No.
On to sequels and remakes. Since you've set me up for that beautifully.
Yeah, I know.
Jones is planning a follow-up graphic novel titled Mute, which will serve as an epilogue to Moon. Should the project progress to a film, Sam has agreed to do a little cameo in the next film, Jones said, who apparently hopes to complete a trilogy of films set in the same fictional universe.
But yeah, think about like what an ending could have been if we'd actually see him get out of the ship and return to Earth.
See, but I prefer just a little hint.
It's obviously a budgetary thing.
Well, then that's fine. But I like that it was just a hint to let you know he made it instead of doing the whole big production, because that almost feels like they're moving into another movie.
It would have been like Planet of the Apes without the Statue of Liberty.
Without the big twist, yeah.
Well, not just the big twist, but the visual conclusion of the movie instead of just like a couple voiceovers. You know, could you imagine like Planet of the Apes ending with just like a, well, damn it, this is the planet Earth. Just as a voiceover with nothing like, you know, visually, you know, acknowledging any of it.
But if you visually acknowledge it, you run into a bit of a logical issue, because it's a ship that was never built to carry a person.
Right.
So
it comes out of the wreckage, you know?
Thing is, it's going to land, you know, presumably it lands safely, because they need to get the Helium-3 out. But how is it going to land? Where is it going to be in reference to anywhere he can walk away from? You have that whole thing to worry about.
It could have been worked out. There's a crash site. He gets out of it. He's lucky to be alive. But then, of course, he's, you know, rushed by press or whatnot, you know? I mean,
see, that to me would feel more rushed, because that feels like you're moving into a second movie. And, you know, it's the tail end of the movie. So they're going to have to just cut that short. And that would feel more rushed than just a nice hint of he made it and here's some of the blowback.
But then, it's just really not a resolution, you know? It's just kind of this happened.
Well, he was aiming for a trilogy.
Yeah.
He was planning on doing a trilogy, so he's not really going to completely resolve it. It was really just setting up for the next movie, I think. It was, he made it back to Earth and, you know, did some testifying and, you know, there are repercussions. And that's what we're going to deal with in the next movie, presumably.
I mean, yeah, it really could have just ended with him getting out of the ship and being rushed by people and you know, and that being it.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have just cost a lot more money because they would have had to have had a different set.
Yeah, it was clearly budgetary, but I liked it. Anyway, on to Brains.
Yeah, I guess we are on to Brains. I mean, you can't really do a remake of this, of course, and he's got two sequels planned, so let's see what he's got.
This is the second time I've seen it, as I mentioned. While I don't think it stands up to replay value because, you know, you lose the surprise of the clones, I still really liked it. I can't find fault in it, so I'm going to own 5.
I'm pretty close with you. I think, the ending just was kind of a letdown, so I'm going 4.5.
Okay. And what have we learned?
We learned to put some more parameters in your fucking computer if you want to keep a cover-up.
And I learned that sometimes it can be very difficult to get along with yourself. So, until next week when we'll be reviewing Wrong, that's actually the name of the movie. It's by the same director as Rubber, so I'm hopeful about that one. I think our streak of good movies is going to continue for at least one more week.
Until we get to the big bus.
Or Legend. Actually, no, we said we were going to be doing Sgt. Pepper soon. That's going to be the end of the streak, I think.
Yeah, we do need to do Sgt. Pepper very soon.
Until then, until next week, not until we do Sgt. Pepper, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course the episode itself, which you're already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes, we'd really appreciate it. You'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. So far, it's only in order through next week, we gotta get on that. You'll also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, leave it on the request form. We also need to be getting to some requests in the near future. We're a little overdue on those.
Yeah, we are.
And of course, you'll find the recommendations list. I was pretty sure this was going to make it.
Yeah.
You'll also find the PodTrack survey, which I mentioned before. Please fill out the PodTrack survey for all of the reasons I mentioned at the top of the show. You can also email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTO1. Or for the alphanumerically challenged, 414-368-9861. And of course, remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. So until next week, always remember and never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
You are.
Yeah, you think too much, pal. You need to get laid.
White House Down. We have to review that as soon as possible.
Oh yeah.
Have you seen the ads for it? It's currently it's gonna be in theater soon.
It looks horrendous.
You've seen. Okay. It's a Roland Emmerich film.
Is it?
Explicitly about blowing up Washington DC.
But that explains it all now. And the writing just looks so lazy.
Starring Channing Tatum.
I've heard it being called, Die Hard with Channing Tatum.
Yeah. And so it's Roland Emmerich doing what he does, explicitly doing what he did on the side in every other movie.
Gleefully destroying America.
And with Channing Tatum, possibly the worst working actor. We have to.
I think you're right.